You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
On Tuesday, over 100 people rallied inside the meeting hall of the Vancouver Public Library's main branch. They came together to launch a grassroots campaign that seeks to create new social housing for BC's vulnerably housed and homeless. The campaign is coinciding with the start of the provincial election season in BC, with the additional goal of making BC's poor state of affordable housing an election issue. I'm joined in the studio this morning by Cecily Nicholson and Connor Donegan. Cecily is the administrator at Gallery Gachet and a longtime community organizer in Vancouver's downtown east side. Connor is a community organizer with the Vancouver Renters Union. Welcome, Connor and Cecily, to Red Eye.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So, Cecily, the coalition's campaign materials use an image of an iceberg to describe the poor state of affordable housing in BC. What does this comparison look like?
Well, I mean, it's essentially highlighting the fact that what we can see as a surface problem is just the tip of the iceberg. So it's a pretty straightforward metaphor. But in terms of numbers and clearly homeless in BC, we're talking about 11,000 people. And these are always conservative estimates. And that's the visibly homeless. So just below the surface, as we describe, is the 40,000 hidden homeless. So these are folks, couch surfing, living with families in cars or substandard dwellings, and just a shy, step away from the street. And then we also have a huge population, so again, a conservative estimate of 65,000 people who are at risk of homelessness. And that's, too many people who are maybe one check, a paycheck away kind of thing, but are spending close to 50% or more of their income on housing, which is ridiculous, obviously, when we think of the cost of living and all the other things that we have to pay for. So that's a simple, short version.
And so what would be a proportion of someone's income that would be considered affordable for housing?
Well, definitely less than 30%, but even that, right?
Connor, who's at threat with this lack of affordable housing? Like, who are the people hit the hardest?
Well, certainly in BC, Aboriginal people are probably hurting more than anyone else right now as a group. In the Greater Vancouver area, Aboriginal people constitute at least 30% of the homeless population, despite being less than 4% of the general population. So that crisis there is pretty extreme. And on reserve as well, all research indicates that there's a looming crisis as population grows and the new units just are not keeping up.
And Cecily, I know you work closely with a lot of underhoused and vulnerably housed women on the downtown side. How does this impact women?
It's a huge impact on women's safety and security. And we know that that hidden homeless population there's a huge overrepresentation of women and children. Women staying in insecure and unsafe environments for the sake of having a roof over their children's head, to protect against child apprehension, and all sorts of other vulnerabilities. The fact is that women, once they are homeless, the threats of violence and bodily harm, health indicators, everything plummets. And a woman's chance of being dying increases about 10 times the rate of a woman who is housed. So, I mean, they're pretty stark and clear indicators that housing at home is a base component for women's safety, as well as all those other things that we just simply should have in terms of leisure and security. But, violence.
And so the Social Housing Coalition has formed and put together a 6-point platform list of policy changes that are needed. Some of those are focused on social housing itself and others on the broader affordable housing stock. Cecily, what's the coalition asking the BC government to do regarding social housing?
Regarding social housing, so first of all, it has a definition of what social housing is. Is it something I can maybe just quickly go over? So we're meaning non-institutional housing that is owned by government, a nonprofit group, or a co-op. It's not run for profit, really critically. This is good, dignified housing. So housing that is has a bathroom and has a kitchen in a unit. So we're not talking of the bathroom down the hall or this an SRO. Housing is available to people with very low incomes who pay either 30% of their income or their welfare shelter amount for rent. So, again, low affordability. It's got to be available to all residents of BC who need it, regardless of age, gender, ability, and so on, and immigration status. So one piece in terms of vulnerable populations that we didn't touch on is the impact for migrant communities in particular. Many newcomers spending over 50% of their income on housing, it's a primary concern. And should like, housing should not be contingent on people's citizenship status. That's just inhumane. And for everyone who cannot afford market rents, there needs to be housing for folks who are retired, disabled, unemployed. And no one should be kicked out of the housing if their income increases and they're still in a vulnerable position. If people who need it, they should be able to have it. And basically that premise that housing is a right. So that's sort of our definition of social housing. And then I guess the main points that we're asking BC as a province to consider and potential political parties that we might support, first of all, to build the 10,000 units of good quality social housing per year. And that's an immediately something that people jump on is like, well, we can't afford it. We can't afford not to house people. And this is a minimum of what's needed. So and contrary arguments in terms of cost is absurd and frustrating because it talks to us about what is really valued. We need to prioritize social housing units for Indigenous people, migrants, women, seniors, folks with mental health and physical disabilities, which is also disproportionately represented in terms of homelessness and marginalized populations, especially folks with HIV and AIDS and vulnerable low-income people. We need to save the existing low-income rental units, and I think Connor can talk a little bit more about this, but enforcing standards of maintenance, just so tiring to have to keep asking for this 10 years. It's just deeply frustrating, not, you know, freezing rents and not allowing evictions or rather renovations to lead to evictions. We need to protect tenants. We need to recognize tenant unions, support tenant unions, and to empower them to negotiate with landlords. We need to make all supportive and student housing covered by the Residential Tenancy Act. Again, this idea that we can have this separate collection of housing that isn't covered by the same rights as the average citizen, quote-unquote. We need to include everyone who needs housing. And again, so not discriminating based on legal status, particularly for temporary migrant workers. And we need to fund social housing through taxation, straight up. Like, we need not to be shy about this language of taxation because it's uncomfortable in the neoliberal era. We need to fund it through taxation and to consider it a social responsibility of the government and to support communities to develop and manage their own social housing. And it happens... we are unique in our neglect, and there are many examples in other states, in other parts of the world, of wealthy economies who full-on support social housing in a significant way.
Connor, you organize with the Renters Union, and you see firsthand the many loopholes in the Residential Tenancy Act, and you see the ways in which affordable housing is inaccessible to people who are market renters. How does this play out when in the day-to-day what you see on the ground organizing?
The loophole that you're referring to that allows landlords to renovict their tenants is in the Residential Tenancy Act. What's good about it is that it sets out to regulate the rent increases that landlords can give each year. But it doesn't apply to housing units, only to tenancies. So anytime there's a lapse in, anytime a landlord signs on a new tenant, they can increase the rent at whatever rate they'd like. And given that the RTA also allows them to gain vacant possession of the units simply for the purpose of renovating, they have an incentive and the ability to just kick people out to raise the rent. So that's the rent eviction. And we're proposing to just eliminate that loophole. Say, at the very least, eliminate their right to gain vacant possession for the sake of renovations, which is the reason why we pay rent, to have a secure place to live that's decently kept. But I guess to speak from my experience with the renters' union, we can see this, why this demand, as well as the demand for tenant unions, is really important, is that the landlord's ability to deal individually with tenants one at a time gives them an incredible amount of leverage and power over tenants. Just like in the workplace, it's so important to have a collective voice so that you can't be manipulated in certain ways, or is really necessary in the housing market, where tenants get singled out by a landlord and manipulated in certain ways. For example, we were organizing at a building at 1850 Adenac, owned by Lorenzo Aquilini. And the management there was not just kicking people out one at a time, but as tenants were watching their neighbors, you know, disappear, have to move out suddenly, they would be approached by the management to say, you know, doesn't look like you'll be here much longer, but, you know, there's a nice room across the hall we just renovated. You can move in for an extra $300 a month, you know, and so they're up against the wall. And this is obviously illegal, we think, and of course it's abusive and unfair as well. And so recognizing tenants to bargain collectively with their landlords, we think will give them a lot of power to avoid these kind of abuses.
And those abuses exist even while following the Residential Tenancy Act. And then, as Cecily said, the student housing and the supportive housing for people with complex health issues, I guess that's supportive housing as opposed to social housing. Those kinds of tenants aren't even covered by the RTA.
Yeah, absolutely. And in certain cases, there are tenants who've been living in a supposedly supportive housing institution for a very long time, years. But it's called supportive housing. So their landlord is able to, for example, enter their apartment at any time, something that that other tenants are protected from. And they certainly deserve that protection as well.
So if I were to pass by the intersection of Main Street and Broadway, or Main Street and Hastings Street today at noon, mm-hmm. I'd see a group of people hosting a stand for social housing. Cecily, maybe you could speak to this. What is a stand, and why did the coalition choose to host these stands?
Sure, and this is a model actually that we inherit from some previous initiatives around social housing organizing, and this is a commitment that folks can make that's a relatively minimal time spent, 1 hour, 12 to 1 o'clock, in solidarity with these stands across the province. Well, I should say across the Lower Mainland and a few up towards the north. I think we've got about 11 to 15 locations for this Saturday. It's to basically bring awareness to the streets. So we've got these kits, they've got the sign, the banner, we will send to you the flyers, engage in conversations with your neighbors in the community that you're in, folks passing by. So it's an awareness raising, it's trying to make present this issue. I mean, housing struggles in this city, housing struggles in the Lower Mainland and this province are long-standing. We all, you know, there's decades of history behind this. So I think people are tired of the struggle and the battle, which, you know, post-Gordon Campbell has just been devastating. But we really need people to care and to not tire on this issue and actually strengthen. So, yeah, this is a simple, if you're interested, you can visit the website. If I can give that address, it's just basically socialhousingbc.com. There's lots of information on there, how to organize a stand in your own community, access a kit and stuff like that, among other things. More information there.
And what are those other things? Mm-hmm. How would you recommend people get involved to lend their support? Are there other things they can do other than organizing their own stand or supporting a stand?
Sure. I think there's lots of things that people can do. So, for example, something like the Renters Union, actually to get active in your own lives in terms of how you organize your housing. I think it's possible to organize in your own community, presentations, talks in your classrooms, amongst friends, family, talk the issue up, build this awareness. Certainly people are welcome, and we encourage people to join the Social Housing Coalition, either as individuals or on behalf of organizations. We meet once a month. There's some committee work as well, but we meet once a month, the first week of the month, Wednesday. You can certainly participate as we build towards a campaign in terms of the stands or similar actions. So there's lots of parallel kinds of efforts. If you're not sure, send us a note. But definitely for everybody who's already working on Housing to Connect, we need to be in good communication and we need to build a campaign. And we need to ask parties in power to listen to the people, because it's not a couple individuals. This isn't just about some quote-unquote controversial activists or an issue of policy and politics. This is a groundswell of people across the province who recognize this crisis and are living it every day. So all of us, we need to communicate. And in a time like Idle No More and in the context of an anti-colonial struggle, we definitely need to up the ante. This is not a radical campaign. Yeah, this is practical.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both so much for coming in today and sharing this really inspiring campaign with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Connor Donegan and Cecily Nicholson. Connor is a community organizer with the Vancouver Renters Union, and Cecily is the administrator at Gallery Gache and a long-term community organizer here in the Downtown East Side. If you'd like to find out more information, as Cecily said, about the Social Housing Coalition, you can visit socialhousingbc.com.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.